This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. Welcome back from the holiday. I've got here with me Karamjit Singh, Chong Jin Seung, and Anusha Kandasivam from digitalnewsasia.com. It's been a while since I spoke to them. Happy Deepavali, Anu.
Thank you.
And I know that the Sikhs sort of celebrate it as well.
Yes.
Ish. Okay. Anyway, welcome back. Of course, this is what we do. We talk about the tech ecosystem.
Yep.
And we're going to start with Jin. We'll start with the gaming industry. So
yes.
This is Garena Malaysia, the digital entertainment platform under C Group,
yes,
which announced
right.
that mobile gamers across Malaysia are now able to pre-register for Arena of Valor, or AOV, which is Asia Pacific's market-leading mobile game co-developed by Tencent Games.
Yeah, it's actually called King of Glory, I think, in China, actually.
Ah,
and
it
was like the hit King game of the summer. And actually, just a quick update, and I need to update this as well.
Okay.
It's actually available already. Players can really play. I've been trying it for the past 2 days already. Yeah. So when I wrote the
research,
story, it was still they actually hinted last week, because I met some people from Garena, that they were going to launch this game. It's pretty big, and they did a preview session on Saturday. But I think following that, on Tuesday, it went live actually. So actually, I've been trying it out. It's a pretty addictive game, but of course, I'm still here, so I'm taking time off from playing it. But it's still... But any case, you're right. This is a pretty big game because it's developed by Tencent. Mm. So, you know, they have that big financial backing between it. And more interestingly, they've even roped in local telcos as well with DG and Maxis. So they even have special plans where they allocate data to gamers who want to play. So according to some estimates, that at least in the release that they wrote, you can play up almost 300 over games... With this in the, I mean, with that,
wow.
I mean, worth up to that amount, I suppose. But nonetheless, it affords you to be able to play this game exclusively with your data connection without having to worry. So whether you're on Wi-Fi, you're outside, you'll probably be able to play this. So all the more, it drives that the addictive nature of the game and how, you know, it's... And they're going to be, furthermore, they're going to drive... this as well at the Comic Fiesta later in December.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to have competitions and such. So I see like Garena's pushing this pretty hard, I'd say.
Yeah. I guess if people who wants to take part, they can register, right? They can go to register.mobe.garena.com.
They can register the interest, but it's already available on Google Play and Apple as
and
well.
And it's number one spot. I mean, it was a big hit on the downloads.
Almost like a sleeper hit. You don't read much about it. Maybe because it's covered by the Chinese press, because it's a Tencent game. Is that the reason why?
Actually, it just was released this week, actually.
Okay.
Just this week. But I think they've been doing some beta tests and pre-tests. But actually, I think this game's been out for... since the middle of the year, but right now it's just released in our shores, so in the SEA market. So I think in Thailand, Singapore, and ourselves, we're kind of like in the same grouping. So I think they kind of like push that
simultaneously at the same time. Okay.
But it was launched in Taiwan in October 2016.
Yeah. Correct. That helps build the buzz, right? Because you're already aware of the game.
It does.
Just think of all that time wasted.
That's
a whole different world for me, so okay, from mobile
for me too.
From mobile gaming, we're revealing our age. Let's talk about mobile phones, right? Huawei unveils an AI-powered Mate 10 and Mate 10 Pro recently. So now AI will be used to enhance photo taking, voice calling, and translation. How does that work?
Well, so Huawei just recently announced this on Monday in Munich. So this is their big flagship phone for the series. So it's going to go up against players like the Note 8 and such. So this is their big flagship phone. So interestingly, they're going to be putting AI into their chip technology as well, the processor, the brains behind it. So what it does is that it's smart enough that it can detect images and can even detect, you know, what's around you, or what the sound around you. So like, they described it as this feature called Easy Talk, whereby it's able to like identify, hey, are you in a quiet area or are you in a loud environment? If it's quiet, let me boost your voice. If it's loud, let me try. If it's quiet, like in this studio setting,
right,
I don't need to go really soft. It'll boost my voice. Likewise, if in a noisy area, it will boost your voice so that the other side can hear it.
Not bad,
so
it's interestingly cool.
And
especially in our line of work.
Definitely, I'm sure. And it's able to even like does image recognition, so it's like really fast. They call it NPU. So this is a neural processing unit. It's a new term they've embedded in their Kirin chips. So using the camera is even quicker to in its automatic mode. So you can identify, yes, that's a dog in front of me, that's a tree, that's a person, that's the sky. So it will automatically, like, okay, this is the right setting to use for this for this setting. So, like, these are two of the big AI items that they've embedded on the chip that they're hoping to, you know, enhance on the Mate 10. And the two Mate 10 series are quite, I would say, they're pretty good-looking phones, I would say. We had a chance to touch it, I think, last week or so during a preview session. And it's I'm quite excited to see what this AI-powered chip will do for us in the future.
Pricing?
Pricing-wise, they haven't mentioned it yet. Mm. But this is a premium model, so I think... But it's hard to say because it hasn't had a local launch yet.
Mm.
But I think it may be quite interesting. I think this is probably one of the last few... I wouldn't put out whether it's the most interesting phone of the season yet.
Okay.
You never know what will come in the next few months. Yeah. It's almost a year end, but I think it really heats up the competition of what could be the next big phone for this quarter.
So did they say when it'll be available?
Not yet, but I think it's quite soon. I think in the next month
in
or so.
In line for Christmas.
Yeah.
Very definitely it'll be here before Christmas, I think. If it's not end of this month, it'll probably be early next month or so. Probably. Okay. I mean, it's speculating whether it is, but we'll see.
Okay, all right. So talking about AI, Dell also unveiled their new IoT strategy. So to leverage on AI and machine learning technology with IoT infrastructure.
Yes. Well, Dell had some pretty big announcements last week. They had a conference in New York talking about IoT. And I mean, they coined out a new term of IQT. IQ and technology together, but this is a blending together of your regular IoT and the brains of your big data computing and AI technology, putting it together. And Dell Technologies has really put IoT at the forefront because they even set up a new IoT division, so specifically a division set up for developing even investing, I would say, over a billion US dollars into research and development for the next 3 years. So there's a really big push from them. And they're talking about not only just, you know, developing IoT for themselves, but like in the ecosystem. So they're really talking about trying to, you know, help other vendors and stuff. It's really like trying to be all-encompassing and not just, you know, let's come out with Dell IoT products and, you know, do smart lights, smart monitors or smart bulbs or anything like that. It's not just them, but it's like trying to create an ecosystem and they're working together with vendors as well.
Mm. It's been a while since Dell came out with any major announcement of any sort, right?
I think
they were busy with the acquisition of EMC, right?
So that was last year.
Yeah, correct.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So this is the next major announcement as well.
Big things.
Okay, so, and you attended the UK Mega Tech Mission.
That was me.
That was you, Anu. Okay, we'll hear from Anu in just a moment. Speaking to the folks from Digital News Asia, Karamjit Singh, Chonjing Seung, and Anusha Kandasivam. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Good morning. You're listening to Enterprise. If you just joined us, Frida Liu here, speaking to Karamjit Singh, Chongjin Seung, and Anusha Kandasivam from digitalnewsasia.com. Of course, we talk about the tech system, right? Tech ecosystem. And there's Anu, who's got a story, and she's fresh from Deepavali.
Yes.
Very fresh.
All the murkus and what other you? Things.
It's a mutton barvel. So you attended the UK Megatech mission that's organised by UK's Department of International Trade and MDEC, and Malaysia will now serve as a gateway to Southeast Asia and UK as a launchpad to more mature markets. So what's the story here?
Well, so the UK Megatech mission, this is the second time they're here. The first time was last year, obviously. This time there were 40 tech companies from the UK coming down here to meet a lot of our own Malaysian tech companies. Last year, it was only 11 companies came from the UK.
Mm.
So it's a much, much bigger delegation this time. And so they didn't want to speculate as to how much business will be generated and things like that, but they did say that about 1,000 business matching meetings have been arranged.
Okay.
And I think I was there on the first day, and already 800 had taken place.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
So that was 11 last year, and this year how many, you say?
40 companies, okay. Yeah. So last year, they generated 270 million ringgit of foreign direct investment as a direct result of the mission.
This one mission. Wow.
This one mission, yeah. So, and that was 11 companies. Yeah, so this time, they didn't want to speculate how much it's going to be, but obviously it's going to be, like, you know, a lot bigger.
Times four, la.
We hope, yeah, la. Four. We hope it's going to be times four, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it generated a lot of businesses. And so, you know, and people were saying that, you know, people usually sign MOUs and nothing comes,
yes,
of it.
Correct.
But, you know, there is evidence that there is business and trade going on because of these missions. So, yeah.
Okay. And I think, like, also, like, you know, I guess they do have to look at who their partners are, especially now they're Brexited, right?
Yeah.
So they are planning Brexit. Yeah, even more urgency, right? To form strong collaborations beyond the EU, for sure.
Yeah. Mm. So they're definitely looking to the future and trying to see what they can do once they're out of the EU, like new partnerships and things like that, without Europe in the picture. And I did ask Dylan Thomas, who is the Director of Technology and Smart Cities at the UK's Department of International Trade, about have there been any doubts about from the point of view of our tech companies in light of Brexit, like, are they doubtful about partnerships with UK companies? And he said no, there's been no negative feedback at all regarding future partnerships with UK companies. And
we have a history.
He said, in fact, there's a lot of interest from here in UK companies, because the UK market has a very large consumer base of first adopters and first adopters of innovative technologies. So in that way, the UK consumers are quite similar to Southeast Asian consumers, because we love innovative technologies and we are usually first adopters.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of similarities between us.
Right, and I think the way they appreciate us in this part of the world is, you know, again, the history, and then there's Singapore, there's Malaysia that speaks English.
Yes. Right. So definitely language is one of the things that is that's pulling them very strongly here. Mm-hmm. Of course, our government is playing ball. Mm-hmm. Our government is very, very keen for investment. So yeah, that of course is it. And then the education level of people here, especially in science and technology. So I spoke to one of the companies that was signing an agreement, one of the UK companies signing an agreement with a Malaysian company. And he's the CEO, if I'm not mistaken, I spoke to him. He said, yeah, that is one of the great pulls, was he realized that over here we have a lot of UK universities. Mm. So it's very, very clear to people who, even if you don't know anything about Malaysian education, it's very clear that there is a lot of people here who are educated on the same level as people
your,
in the
your
UK.
Your Nottinghams and your Reddings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's not a big gap at all for them to, the way they run their businesses, and you know, they don't have to change a lot of things, they don't have to educate their staff in things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
We spoke about Epsom, so can we just link it to Tony and Tony's new Happy Hood?
Yeah, Happy Hood.
Maybe it has a different segment.
It has a different segment. And we wish him all the joy and happiness.
Absolutely.
And sticking with the business stories, Pinjam is a new service that brings the pawn services online to 8 SMEs. Now you can connect to pawn brokers. They've gone digital too.
Yeah. So this is a story from Indonesia.
Now everyone can pinjam.
Yeah. Yes.
So, cool name also. You think it's Malaysian, but yeah, hey, it's out of Indonesia.
Yeah. So our colleague Yuni in Jakarta wrote the story. So Pinjam is, they're giving business loans to micro businesses and SMEs as well through an online pawn service.
Hmm.
Yeah. So very interesting, isn't it? So basically, you can register through a web-based platform, and then you upload a picture of whatever thing you want to pawn, and then they have they sort of value it for you.
I wonder how you can do that, because, you know, it's like gold. How do you how do you put that? Let's say when someone's got a gold necklace, right?
Correct.
True. Is it real gold or fool's gold? Right.
Fool's gold.
You can also go to one of Pinjam's partners. They have a lot of partners, and then to verify. Yeah. So somebody will value the gold for you, for example, if it's something else, then you also give the item to one of the partners. So Pinjam doesn't actually have a shop. Yeah, so that's how they work. Their business model is they work through a collaboration with partners, and it's a revenue sharing.
Right. The existing, they probably don't have a digital platform. So now they're just getting all the pawn brokers together under one roof, sort of thing. No. I would have thought, because then you still need to go through partners to verify. So these are the existing ones. They probably don't have a website, right? So then after that,
Because they're not... So from... This is uni story. So from what uni has written, I gather that it's... They don't use... Their partners are not pawn shops. They are...
Just sort of verifiers.
Verifiers, yeah. Okay. And they also... You also give your goods to them. And then they... And it sort of goes from there. So they...
Okay, so they're verifiers. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so they're verifiers and not pawn shops itself. Oh, interesting. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is out of Indonesia.
Indonesia, yeah.
You might probably come to this part of the world.
I don't know. Well, they... depends on regulations.
Right.
The regulations in Indonesia, I gather, are pretty strict about who can and cannot be run a pawn shop. And they need to be 100% Indonesian owned and funded.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
But I think there's enough business in Indonesia for the moment before having to think about.
Yeah,
we're all trying to get into Indonesia, so it's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a huge market there. Yeah, and you know, people are applying. Yeah.
They would have a lot of potential to expand just within Indonesia itself and then think about Malaysia later.
Okay, we've got Budget 2018 coming, and PCOM has set their recommendations for the ICT sector. They've urged the government not to impose a tax on software, and government should accelerate the use of disruptive ICT technologies. Yeah.
So this is, of course, with the budget coming up and PCOM being a national ICT association, right? They want to have a influence in you know, some of the perks and incentives that the budget will come out with, and also try to roll back some, maybe they worry about some negative decisions being made. And one of them was on imposing. They're asking the government to withhold the imposing tax on software because the Finance Act 2017 treats software as a royalty, and they said that this has had a detrimental impact on the local software industry. And then also compounding this is the uncertainty on the application of this withholding tax on software prior to 2017, because they worry that it will be implemented retrospectively. So this is effective 2015. So alamak, you know, so a lot of accounting there to be done and all. So they're saying, hey, you know, you want to support the ecosystem, let's just not go there, right? So they hope that this won't be implemented at all. And just because you want Malaysia to be at the forefront of the digital economy and the leader in this digital age, don't stop talking about, you know, taxing these kind of things. The multiplier effect is so big out there, right, in terms of innovation, creativity, you know, people trying to come up with things. Don't have to worry about, oh, do I have to pay tax if I use this piece of software? So it's just messy. And then the other one is on STEM. Obviously, they have an interest to see that more people take up STEM education, which is science, technology, the E's, engineering and mathematics, right? And what's interesting is they said maybe you want to provide students with a stipend or monetary incentives to pursue additional online courses too, or even purchase technology and procure additional resources. So I think that's a bit too vague. When you say, okay, give students, you know, who want to maybe pursue an online course, of course, there are lots of courses for free, but there may be some paid. But if it's STEM related, maybe, you know, if the parents are paying for it, so let them maybe get they get to deduct it from their, you know, a taxable allowance, increase their taxable allowance because of that. So that's an interesting idea, I thought. Purchasing technology and procuring additional resources is a bit too vague, so you need to really drill down for the government to say, okay, maybe you'll consider that. But I think allowing parents to, you know, pay for an online course for their kids and then, you know, get that deducted, fantastic, right? And then also talk about corporate tax incentives, right, for companies that provide scholarships. If you're giving a scholarship for computer science, software engineering and STEM-related courses and to train your employees, you know, to get professional certification, hey, and especially in core areas, so this is good, right? They say if you want to give, you know, corporate tax incentive for companies that are sending staff for certain programs, you know, in the core areas of data science, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and others. So, and others is a bit vague, but when you be specific, it's easy for the government to say, okay, we do that. And then if it works, right, next year you can expand that, right? So this is something interesting. I think corporates are already, you know, giving staff, you know, allowances to go for training and maybe even paying for it and locking them down. In terms of your, you know, you got to serve 18 months contract. I'm going to send you to be a Cisco certified network engineer, which is a very valuable program out there. Maybe with this, they're saying, hey, my 20 or 30K, I'll be able to get it back. So maybe your bond then is 6 months. So it's it creates maybe more fluidity in the ecosystem, and more people want to go for this program because companies are willing to.
Yeah.
So that's a really good idea by Picom, and I hope they push for that and get that through, right?
Okay, so we'll see. I mean, we'll find out next week.
Yeah, next week. And then if it doesn't work, then maybe the year after, right? Mm. You just keep pushing it. These are really two good ideas. Then just one quick one is that this, because I'm planning to get a new PC next year because it's the end of that 3 years where I can claim that 3,000 ringgit. Mm. And they've got a good idea here. They said, look, you know, you should, this tax relief should be exercised annually and not every 3 years. And it should cover even tablets and smartphones.
Yeah. And those things as well, yeah.
Correct, more devices,
I thought
right?
that law has changed.
So, I don't know, well, Picom is saying that...
I think it's been taken off, of course. I thought in my current, like when I was doing my taxes and everything, I thought that the incentive was off already.
It falls under a bigger picture, which includes laptops and smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
It has changed.
Okay, so but Picom's allowance here is they're talking about that though, you know, bigger ticket items and yearly. So you mean that 3,000 ringgit?
I think it's 3,000, but it covers encompasses.
Yeah, I think it's across these three.
So they have broadened it.
It's not 3 years now. Can we make it annual?
Yeah, they're saying
maybe more frequent. If you upgrade your phone, but nowadays our phones are so expensive, so. That 3,000 will hardly cover it.
Yeah, but it's better than nothing, right? And that every 3 years is locks you in, right? So look at me as a consumer. I'm thinking, okay, January I can get a new machine, so I'm going to wait till January.
Which is what I do. You know what I mean? You know, thinking that has not, I'm not realizing that has.
So that's a good idea to at least do it yearly, right? Yeah.
Okay.
And then they also want them to reintroduce the EPF PC scheme. You know, so I don't know whether they'll go there or not. Lots of things there. Some really good ideas from Picom. I think you narrow it down and push, right?
I think you ask for 10 lah. Then you get 3 or so better than nothing, correct. Right? Only ask for 3, you don't get any, you see?
Yeah. True.
Confuse them with lots of requests.
Correct.
You know, I know it works. CyberView Living Lab Accelerator Startups showcases smart city innovation. So this is after 5 intensive months in the program. We have 5 startups now.
Yeah. So this is kind of interesting. I think the acting MD for CyberView, which is Muhammad Najib Ibrahim, says that, look, you know, we're seizing opportunities with the brilliant minds here today. When he meant here today is at the demo day, right? Because they had 5 startups which were pitching to a group of ecosystem players, VCs, corporate partners and investors at their demo day. So you had 2 fintech and 3 IoT startups. Mm. Pitching not just ideas, but also their products, right, to these people. And the idea is to hopefully you get someone to buy. And this is important because this relates to my other story about Magic, right, the accelerator program. But you know, you're bringing corporate potential buyers or investors to meet these guys with the ideas, with these potential disruptors, innovators. Say this is what they've done. And they've conceptualized the idea into a product at our accelerator, right? So because this is the Living Labs accelerator. And the word Living Labs is important because Cyberjaya says, look, we've got so many companies here. All are very tech-savvy. And chances are that they would be much more open to trying a pilot, a prototype from you if you've got a tech, you know, a base product for us to use. So that's why they came up with this accelerator like 2 years ago. And and this is one of their, I think they've already had other batches before. So this after 5 months of intensive, you know, grooming and all.
Mm.
So which is quite good. So
do you have any knowledge about these 5?
I mean, the names are there. So you've got LuxTech and MHub. Which I guess it means a money hub, not Malaysia hub, because it's, you know, fintech. And then you've got IoT solution providers, Campfire. Right. But the fire is pronounced differently.
No, spelled differently.
Spelled differently, yeah, pronounced, not pronounced.
FYI, fire.
Not FI, yeah. Cannot, and then you've cannot. Got tech care innovation and app cable. So maybe it's round cable. So it's kind of interesting, I think. And each of these startups, right, the selected ones are getting resources and facilities valued at 50,000 ringgit each. You know, to be pilot and investment ready. So this is a really good program. You hope to see more startups looking and where they want to have a ready-made pool of companies that may want to be your first customers. Then I think heading down to the CyberView Living Lab Accelerator is, you can't go wrong there.
All right. We'll cover a story. We'll cover more stories after this. I'm here with Karamjit Singh and everybody. I got to get the full names because just call them by short names. Chong Jin Seong and Anusha Kandasivan from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Business-friendly Malaysia.
BFM 89.9.
You're still listening to Enterprise's Tech Talk with Karimjit Singh, Chong Jin Seong, Anusha Kandisivan from Digital News Asia. We've covered a lot of things a little earlier on. Now we're moving over to Southeast Asia. There's a higher rate of users being affected by potentially harmful applications, and there are cultural aspects related to the use of some security technologies. Yeah. So interesting.
Very interesting. I mean, there's research report done by Hootsuite and We Are Social says that there are over 4.9 billion unique mobile users worldwide as of January 2017, and 11% of that total is in this part of the world, Southeast Asia, which means almost 550 million unique mobile users. They don't mention the breakdown of smartphone, yeah? And that's where you're vulnerable to all these viruses, right? Because then you're surfing the internet and getting connected with apps and all. But, that it's also almost like everyone in Southeast Asia, right? They say there are like 600 million people here, so there are 550 million unique mobile users, which I find kind of strange. I don't think a whole bunch of those are children under the age of 10 who don't have smartphones. Mm. So this is kind of interesting. But whatever, the point is, there's just
a lot of people who've got phones.
Yeah, right? Some people, yeah,
two
correct.
Or three.
So there are a lot of people in this region with phones and Android. You got the head of Google's, director of Android security. So he had a video call with a bunch of journalists in the region, and then our Shamila Ganapati is there listening in also. So the story is based on that. And he also mentioned, yeah, there's some cultural aspects. But then he also gave 5 tips, for you to stay safe on your mobile.
Before you get the tips, so what are the cultural aspects?
The culture, he said, in some countries, the data that they get via Google Play Protect, because then you Google Play Protect is the site there where you can download certain stuff for your phones. And so that's how they get data points. Hey, this country, Myanmar, so few people, maybe in Indonesia a lot more. But he said that in some countries in the world, over 95% of users have lock screens. And then in some countries, it's down to 50%. So he says there are clearly cultural aspects related to the use of some of these security technologies. Mm. I think one of the cultural aspects is just having trust of things online, right? Whereas here, I think we're a lot more trusting of online, like the way people buy stuff, right?
Mm. The way people share news
to some. But when you even buy stuff, right? Yeah. So like I've been selling some stuff recently on Muda, and then the people, and it's in a box, right? And then only one out of the few buyers have said, hey, is this a complete set? Oh. Is everything in there? And then, of course, you're an ethical person, you do that, right? But only 1% asked, and then is there a warranty? Is there a manufacturer's warranty?
The rest is just a
store warranty. Mm. And so few people, and they're giving you cash. You're selling it hundreds of dollars. Right? And I'm amazed that just giving you cash and taking the boxes away,
Because you just showed the box, is it?
Yeah.
The box didn't have to have anything in it.
Didn't have to. But the trust, so I'm just giving an example of the trust factor being high, extrapolating it to this. I think here we are generally, much more trusting of things. So
maybe they recognize the name.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I write Digital News Asia. So, but then he's giving, back to this now. He's saying that there are...
Only one at Common Sense.
5 tips to stay safe on your mobile. And I'm not going to read it out to you because read the article. And it's really relevant.
Give one.
Yeah, give one
and
is...
The 4 you have to read.
Which is a tip already, right? Make sure you've enabled data backups because even tech-savvy people don't. And I just got a message from someone yesterday. I'm using a new phone. I lost all my data. I said, goodness me, you're a C-level, very tech-savvy person. But again, maybe you're trusting that, nothing will happen to my phone or it's not going to get stolen or whatever. It's incredible.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Read that article on protecting Android users.
To get the other four. I need to read that. I think I'm quite...
I have I finally activated a software, for my phone and one of the vendors, right? And it's only for 6 months. And they spend more time alerting me, hey, you should get, you should upgrade to a year and we'll give you free stuff. It's annoying, So it's not like we found a dangerous, malware on your phone or what. My phone is safe so far, but they keep bugging you and trying to upgrade. So I'm annoyed, waiting for the 6 month period to be over and I'll get rid of them.
What's on the reading list? What else on the reading list?
I mean, reading list is really, you've got the, reading list is really this, because it's relevant to people on a very personal basis. We can talk about entrepreneurs and innovators. Then, of course, last week is this one story on this, I think my week interview where I spoke about magic, right? They've just finished their Magic Accelerator program. I think, Frida, you've been a regular mentor, right?
Yep.
In that program.
When
so,
I turn up.
You didn't turn up.
When I turn up.
Oh, when you turn up. Yeah, no, but you know they need a hot star like you. So your name helps bring people from around the region. So, but this year, people know already, we've spoken about it, they've had a lot more global participation. And that's why it's called the Magic Accelerator Program. It's actually their global accelerator program. No more the first three.
First three were two
tracks, an SE track, and then the
And also the entrepreneur track was more focused on Malaysia and the region. Now it's global, right?
Yeah.
So startups from even Taiwan and Korea came. So
truth be told, because I was there during the demo day of the cohort.
Okay. Yes, you were there. You wrote the story.
But I think the composition is still quite Malaysian centric.
About 60%. Yes. 60%
still Malaysian, and then when I sat through the demo session. Many were still like Malaysian companies. I was quite surprised. Of course, it's still called GAP. I mean, it's supposed to be global
accelerator.
But I think possibly maybe if people from further away coming in, hopefully next year they'll have more global face company. And reduce that.
So my article, my point was that to get more global companies to come in, the Honey is and Magic's already doing this, right? They've got corporate companies to come in as partners for this, and I think they've increased the corporate partners for this year. And if you're a startup, you're looking for customers, correct?
Yeah.
So a corporate company that's interested has a base of customers already. So that's a hugely attractive component that I think needs to be highlighted more and to attract more corporate players next year. Because next year, if they come in and they say, last year we had 7 corporate partners, this year we've got 17, forget about saying we're also going to give you $500,000 worth of free stuff. Everyone out there is going to say, what, there's 17 corporate partners attached to this, accelerator program? Hey, man, I want to apply and get in there. Mm-hmm. So that was what my week in review was about. I think that's the winning card for them if they get it right.
We'll see what happens next year. I think also because it's first year, they changed their strategy. So we'll see what happens next year as well. And you wanted me to bring up Mr. Tong, NK Tong.
So this is really interesting, right? You've got... because we're organizing our annual yearly conference called What's Next, and which is about how brick and mortar companies are being affected by digital disruption. And you know what's interesting about a conference is we get brick and mortar guys to come and share what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And the audience really likes it because that's authentic sharing, right? You don't bring a tech guy who's the head of a company and talk about it. They can do their bhangra and their joget on stage and give you a great presentation, scare you, but listening to a CEO is there's nothing like that. So we've got, I think NK Tong has, to be fair to him, reluctantly agreed to come and share. He says, hey, Karam, I'm like a
How
dinosaur,
badly did
right?
you twist his arm?
No. Because I've been trying to persuade him for 3 years. And, it's really painful to try to persuade CEOs to come and speak. But we've got a good group of guys coming, an amazing group. We've got the Chief Strategy Officer of Maybank. And his team are now peppering me with, hey, we're going to prepare, Michael Fung, what does he need to know and how is it like, the composition? Great. But for back to NK, he says, I'm afraid that I will stand out. I say, no, NK, you're going to come and you're going to speak about maybe your company and the property vertical. How are they dealing with digital? Because it's already affecting you, right?
Yeah.
It's not even a trend anymore. Yeah. To me, it's a mega trend and it's here now. And just come and share. There's no right and wrong. Yeah. So he's confirmed being a panelist, and I'm super excited. You've got somebody who's got a 600 million ringgit logistics company, and there's so many startups focusing on the logistics space, right? Because they think it's not efficient.
Yes.
And Dato' Michael Teo from PKT Logistics says, right, really cool guy. He's got his own Facebook page, 600,000 over followers. And I'm excited to have him come and share some of these things. So it's just interesting. It's so hard to get these people, but they're there. You should take advantage and come. And of course, you can get the tickets on DNA. You go to the website,
When is this again?
It's on the 9th of November. I forgot to mention that. At the Saujana Hotel. So really interesting stuff happening during that day of sharing. Exciting.
Why don't you have your own Facebook page?
Why don't I have my...
You get thousands of followers, right?
No, but I'm afraid my wife will get upset. Why is it all these lovely women from around the region following you? Yeah, man.
Around the region.
So that's happening.
Around the region, man. Chakaday, let me say that before I have to say it.
November 9th, okay. So do check it out. Of course, the reading list. And then you want to make sure you want to get the other 4 tips because he only revealed one.
Yeah, only revealed one. It's actually useful for me too. I'm glad, Shamila went and did this story. Yeah, useful.
All right. Karamjit Singh, Chong Jin Seong, and Anusha Kandisivan from DigitalNewsAsia.com. You've been listening to Tech Talk on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Chakaday.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.